Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is House Ag Committee Republican Rick Crawford, who joins us to discuss the work of the committee and the impact of inflation on agriculture. But first, here's this week's headlines. Congress sent the Ocean Shipping Reform Act to President Joe Biden's desk. The House voted Monday to pass the Senate version of the bill, which was viewed as a less prescriptive approach to solve the problem of ocean vessels leaving U.S. ports with empty containers. The bill also sets minimum standards for service contracts and prohibits ocean carriers from retaliating against shippers for lodging complaints. House Democrats unveiled a bill that would give a funding boost to the Department of Agriculture. The House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee marked up its bill Wednesday in one of the first steps in the annual appropriations process. The bill includes funding above fiscal 2022 spending levels for federal nutrition, animal and plant health, rural development, and research programs. Under regular order, the bill still needs to be considered by the full Appropriations Committee and then the House of Representatives. The Senate needs to offer funding legislation of its own, but the government is likely to be funded through an omnibus spending package sometime after the start of the 2023 fiscal year at the beginning of October. And finally, the House considered Democratic legislation this week to address food costs, but the Ag Committee's GOP members offered a counter-approach to the Biden administration. Dozens of Republican members of Congress suggested regulatory relief for producers in a letter to President Joe Biden. Then on Wednesday, many of the same lawmakers introduced legislation to the same effect. They say their approach is a preferred way to address inflation. Arkansas Republican Rick Crawford signed the letter and co-sponsored the legislation offered by House Republicans this week. He says inflation is eating into the budgets of producers and consumers alike.
This conversation started, you know, for me and my constituents well over a year ago. As they kind of saw this coming, you know, access to fertilizer, we saw an issue. The I-40 bridge shut down at Memphis that disrupted at a really inopportune time. We were at side dress application needing that fertilizer, and that should have been a clarion call at that point in time to say, look, we need to do something about our supply chain issues. The just-in-time marketing works. When it works, it's a beautiful thing. But when it doesn't, it can create some major disruptions. And so that's what we saw as a result, and that involved fertilizer. And it should have been a wake-up call. Then we see what takes place in the beginning of this year with regard to Russian action in Ukraine and how that has impacted our ability to access fertilizer. We're going to be fine this year, although prices are going to be higher. Production costs are going up. The big question is next year. Are we going to have access to fertilizer next year? Not only would we be paying more for it, but are we going to have access to it? I think that's going to be a question that will remain. That'll continue to be hung over producers' heads. And so we see, you know, struggling with increased costs of production. And, you know, margins are really what we need to be looking at. And people on the outside looking in can look at prices and say, hey, you know, farmers are getting record prices for things like corn, soybeans, wheat, cotton. But they're not considering the cost of production. And so what you should focus on are the margins there. The margins aren't as good as they have been in other years, even though the prices reflect positively. Mm-hmm.
So looking at issues or approaches to address the issue of inflation on both the consumer and producer front, House Democrats this week offering legislation that would do things like expand meatpacking funding, expand some investigatory oversight into that sector. House Republicans countering with an approach that really centers more on regulatory relief. You were involved in a letter and a piece of legislation on the subject this week. Wondering why you think the GOP approach that suggested is the better approach.
Well, I think what we're seeing, and particularly from this administration, is we have regulated ourselves into a state of dependency. I mentioned that issue with fertilizer. When we offshore fertilizer production, we become dependent on those nations that provide it to us. We have the resources to do it ourselves, but environmentalists have put pressure on Washington lawmakers to such a degree that we end up with policy that reflects the wishes of environmentalists without concern of the national security implications there. We can't rely on foreign sources for fundamental inputs like crop protection and fertilizer. And that's exactly what we've done. We've regulated ourselves into this position, and now the Democrats want to do more to regulate us into a point of dependence and almost into submission. This can't continue to happen. And so we've offered some market-based solutions to address this, and I just don't think we need to continue to regulate are such a vital part of our economy, and that's production agriculture.
Mm-hmm. As we look at some of these suggestions that are being proposed, really from either party's piece of legislation, either party's approach, a lot of them take a fairly long view and would take a while to realize benefits. I mean, are there things that, in your opinion, are there things available to Congress that could offer short-term inflationary relief?
Yes, short-term inflationary relief, that is domestic energy production, first and foremost. When President Biden came into office, you know, I think January 21st, 2021, the first thing he did was basically terminate Keystone XL and other projects similar to that. And when you, again, we had achieved a state of independence for energy with regard to our fuels. In fact, we were becoming a net exporter, and he reversed course on that and the drastic impact that's had on our economy, because everything is really tied to the price of a gallon of fuel. So you think about this, so you see a precipitous increase in fuel costs to the consumer, but it's also fuel costs to our transportation sector that's providing food to our consumers. So we see prices at the grocery store going up at the same rate that we see prices of fuel going up, because they've got to recoup those costs somewhere. Everything is downstream. The consumer ultimately pays. We're seeing that in energy with regard to prices at the pump. We're seeing that with the costs associated with delivering groceries to the grocery store. So first and foremost, we need to reverse course on those really, really bad decisions and start utilizing our own domestic energy production at its capacity.
We'll be right back to discuss the GOP plans for the upcoming Farm Bill with Congressman Rick Crawford right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. Many in farm policy are wondering if it might be time to consider adding some new money into the Farm Bill as Congress considers the upcoming 2023 legislation. When we spoke to Congressman Rick Crawford, we asked him about that prospect and what his spending priorities will be for the upcoming Farm Bill.
I think there's going to have to be some things done, you know, with the baseline. One of those things has to do with production costs. I mean, we're dealing with, for example, in the PLC, price loss coverage program, we're dealing with costs, a cost model that was 2012, that reflects 2012 production costs. It wasn't indexed. So therefore, now in 2022, 10 years later, we're behind the eight ball on those programs. And so I think you're going to have to bring that into current levels and then index it. So that's one of the things I think needs to happen, is that we're going to have to index price loss coverage production costs, first and foremost. The thing I think we need to be careful about, though, is things like conservation. The idea that, for example, you can't have conservation practices and produce crops on the same piece of ground. You can, and we probably should, because what we can't do under this administration, you're seeing some crazy ideas thrown out there. For example, let's take some of our most productive farmland and put solar panels on it. And then we'll take the marginal ground and leave that for you to farm. So the marginal ground has been put into things like EQIP and other programs for a reason, because it's marginal. It costs more to try to get less out of that ground. So they've put it into programs like EQIP and other conservation programs. Why not put the solar panels on the marginal ground and keep the productive ground in the base? It just makes more sense. I think they've got that backwards. And so those are the kinds of things that we're going to address, because conservation and production agriculture can coexist, and they can coexist very well. It's not only good for the environment, it's good for the economy. And we've seen that demonstrated over and over again. So those are the kinds of things I think we should focus on.
You mentioned your support for conservation programs. You also mentioned the potential to need to tweak the commodity programs. A lot of money in the conservation title, a lot of money also in the nutrition title of the Farm Bill. The vast majority of the funding in the Farm Bill goes toward that nutrition title. Are you going to be willing to borrow money from the conservation and nutrition titles to beef up those commodity programs absent some kind of infusion of new money?
I'm not sure that we need to. It's not necessarily borrowing. Making sure that each of these programs is adequately funded at the appropriate levels. And we need to have the conversation about what adequate funding for different programs is. So it's too early to speculate whether or not, you know, we're taking money from this program to add to that program. But what I would say is we do have to do a better job with taxpayer dollars. These are finite resources that are provided to the federal government at the expense of the taxpayer. So we need to do a better job by the taxpayer. So quite frankly, that's a conversation we need to have across the board, but that's particularly true here in the ag sector.
Mm-hmm. We look at that nutrition title. It's got a lot more participation during the COVID-19 pandemic. Food prices are rising, making food a little bit more unaffordable for folks. But a lot of folks, every time a farm bill comes around, look to that nutrition title, especially more conservative lawmakers, look to that nutrition title as an area where cuts could take place. Your thoughts on whether or not the nutrition title is going to be ripe for cuts in this 2023 farm bill?
Well, I think it'll be a topic of conversation for sure. And I do think we can do a better job on the management side. I think we can do some things differently, like that we've done in previous farm bills where we had education components to tied to nutrition benefits and so on, so that we're empowering people. You know, the nutrition title doesn't exist to cash flow a lifestyle. It exists to help people who need help. And so we can provide help in a variety of ways. Nutrition is fundamental to that. But what we don't want to do is make that more attractive to people than going out and being employed and being a productive part of the economy. So that's the danger that we look at with virtually any federal program. That, you know, we as conservatives, we want the government to play a limited role, but we also recognize that there's a need out there to help folks. The problem that I have is that folks who need it versus folks who want it, and I think we need to focus on need. And that individuals with disabilities, individuals that are, you know, lower income, and really try to find the way to get them on the on-ramp that they need to be on so that they can be self-sufficient, but recognizing that there are always going to be folks who do have those needs. And we're, essentially, you talked about borrowing resources. We're taking resources and essentially food out of the mouths of people who need it, and giving it to people who, I'd like to have it, so I'm going to go ahead and apply for these benefits. And we've created that climate, and we need to correct course so that we have more people working, more people contributing to help those who need it, as opposed to just saying, yeah, this will work for me. I would prefer to stay on these programs as opposed to go out and go to work. And I hear this consistently from employers in my district all the time. It's finding people that are willing to come back to work. So whatever we do that is designed for, to help people, a lot of times what we do is make the situation worse. And that's been true with the workforce. So we have employers telling me, at least all the time, and I hear it from my colleagues, we can't get people to come back to work. And so that's going to be a topic of conversation as well.
Lots of topics of conversations that will continue to be had as the House Ag Committee prepares and continues, really, its oversight of that 2018 Farm Bill and perhaps the 2023 legislation. Congressman Crawford, thanks for joining us.
You bet. Thank you.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pegel takes a look at where American commodities are going around the world in this week's Map It Out.
U.S. agricultural exports are forecast to hit a new record this fiscal year at $191 billion. This is mainly due to an increase in corn, cotton, and soybean exports and reflects higher prices for those commodities. Total grain and feed exports are projected to top $46 billion. Corn exports are forecast to be over $19 billion, and soybean exports are expected to be a record $32.3 billion. You may be wondering where these products are headed. This map takes a look at which countries are importing the most U.S. agricultural products. During the 2018 trade war, the ag industry was told to look to markets other than China for export growth. But China is still forecast to remain the largest U.S. agricultural market for fiscal year 2022, followed by Mexico and Canada. China is expected to buy $36 billion worth of American ag exports, and Mexico and Canada are both anticipated to top $28 billion each. For this week's Map It Out, I'm Hannah Pegel.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together, we celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Excited to be joined by this week's panel to really take a deep dive on the upcoming Farm Bill and the discussions that we've seen take place to that point. Joined this week by Dennis Nuxall with the Western Growers, RJ Carney with the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, and Barbara Patterson with Michael Torrey Associates. And Barbara, I want to go to you first because we've seen a number of hearings take place from the House Agriculture Committee. The Senate is getting into the act as well these days. But wondering, based on the conversations you're seeing, based on the kind of conversations you're having maybe with lawmakers and with staff, what kind of a farm bill do you think is shaping up at this point in terms of the old evolutionary versus revolutionary question, funding? What are we seeing in terms of the discussions at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head that everyone's sort of been talking about this as an evolutionary farm bill. And I think that's really driven by what are expectations of budget constraints coming up in the upcoming Farm Bill and the discussions that will be under those constraints. I do think that there will be some items that will cause a lot of conversation and perhaps more in previous Farm Bills. I think how the committees deal with climate change and the priorities that different organizations have in the climate change space will be one to watch, certainly. I think SNAP is going to be another area of a lot of debate and consideration over the next year or so. Particularly, we're hearing a lot more around work requirements coming up again, and then some of the other issues around the nutrition programs with the increase that we've seen during the pandemic in expenditures. So we expect that there will be a lot of consideration for the SNAP program and changes there as well. I think those are a couple of the big things that we see coming, but overall expecting not huge radical shifts in the next Farm Bill.
And as we look at that current legislation, the one that they're looking to update here in 2023, Dennis, a lot of the programs that, a lot of the commodities that really will get the most attention are your traditional corn, soybeans, wheat, cotton, rice, some of those more staple commodities. But Farm Bill also includes some language for some specialty crop growers as well. Wondering, how would you assess sort of that 18 Farm Bill for the specialty crop community?
Yeah, every farm bill for the specialty crop community, for us, the farm bill is always focused on research and development funds, and that's the primary area of the farm bill that we use. And the 2018 farm bill was very good to us. Congress was very good to us in providing research and development funds, and we use that money across a wide spectrum of needs. Food safety research, for example, research into automation for harvests, for crop harvest, are a couple of prominent examples of the type of research that we're doing that our industry needs. So the last Farm Bill was very good in that regard. And just to add a little bit to the last question that Barbara answered, one of the other things that we are going to be interested in is how Congress deals more proactively with disaster. That's certainly a big topic. There have been a lot of ad hoc disaster bills the last few years. And I know members of Congress are interested in how to improve the Farm Bill as a way to reduce the number of ad hoc disaster bills. And for our community, we don't have Title I programs, we don't have Title I payments. So tweaking Title I won't be the way that we can deal with disaster. We're going to be very interested to look at crop insurance. About half of the specialty crop community uses crop insurance, in particular orchard crops. Field-grown produce doesn't use crop insurance very much. And, working with Congress to look at crop insurance, how to make big improvements to crop insurance as a way to avoid some of these big disaster bill payments, certainly one of the other items we're looking at this next Farm Bill.
RJ, I want to bring you into the fold here because when you look at the priorities that NASDA has traditionally espoused in the Farm Bill, research funding has always been such a big component that NASDA and many other organizations as well have pushed for. But there's folks who are looking to expand research. There's been calls to expand some commodity reference prices. There's been looks to do a lot of different things that frankly will cost money, and the Farm Bill is not a bottomless pit of money. Wondering, do you think there is the possibility to do things like expand research funding absent some kind of infusion of new money?
Spencer, ag research, we continually see it be prioritized. Unfortunately, typically it falls to number 6 on a list of 5, number 11 on a list of 10. So we at NASDA, and we've been hearing amongst many others in the agricultural community in partnership with a lot of the university, that there needs to be a significant increase in agricultural research. We continue to see the U.S. Fall behind. Some of our trade partners on this specific area of ag research. And we want to ensure that we protect and increase the amount of funding that can go to infrastructure opportunities for a lot of these facilities, but then also maintain the research here in the United States. This is going to be a significant request, but one that, yes, we will be pushing for within NASDA, and we'll be working very closely with the House and Senate to ensure that we can see an increase in agricultural research and finally get it above the fold. That's going to be the key. It can no longer be number six on our list of five. It is a top-tier priority that we need to ensure the House and Senate committees understand, and we find that opportunity to increase its funding.
We'll be right back to discuss the Ag Committee's geography and priorities with our panel right after this.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. One of the hallmarks of farm policy is that it's less partisan, more regional. But a quick look at the chairs and ranking members of the House and Senate Agriculture Committees will reveal that the member that lives furthest to the west is Arkansas Republican John Bozeman. When we spoke to Dennis as part of our panel, we asked him, does that lead to a sufficient level of representation of Western issues on the House and Senate Agriculture Committees?
If you look at the House Ag Committee, there are a large number of Western members. And we certainly are quite pleased with that. I think you raised an interesting point. We would love to have more Western members on the House and Senate Ag Committee, of course. But you know, the members that we have are quite active and quite engaged members who cover a broad spectrum of topics for us. Senator Bennett, for example, is on the Senate Ag Committee, and he covers such a wide spectrum of topics. We talk to him all the time about produce issues, and Western Growers happens to have an affiliate in Colorado, for example, and so we know that he's in tune with many of these topics.
Mm-hmm. Barbara, you were speaking earlier, you mentioned how the conventional wisdom is saying it's more of an evolutionary rather than a revolutionary bill, but some folks are still bringing some pretty revolutionary ass. You look specifically at the area of beef policy, for instance. There's a lot of discussions on that. A lot of that could potentially get folded into the farm bill. Other things like, perhaps that permanent disaster language that Dennis was discussing earlier. Do you think there's going to be, considering the upcoming midterms, considering the looming 2024 elections, your thoughts on whether or not the Ag Committees are going to be in any kind of a place to consider and perhaps agree upon big wholesale changes like that?
I think it's going to be really challenging. You mentioned the midterms. That's certainly going to be a huge factor in both how quickly the next farm bill gets written. There are already so many new faces on Capitol Hill that have never worked on a farm bill before. There's obviously been changes in the leadership of the agriculture committees. So I think it is going to be a huge education effort for any kind of big wholesale changes to farm policy that would need to happen both now, but also, a huge ramp up starting in January when those new members come to town. So I think it's going to be a big challenge to see those big shifts. We're certainly looking at changes in the research space as well that could be very exciting for, to RJ's point about how critical that is to the industry. But I think it's just the newness of the Farm Bill, how robust it is, how many different areas of the economy it touches when you think about all of the areas the rural development title brings in. I just think it's going to be really challenging to get members on board and build a lot of support and momentum for huge shifts.
Mm-hmm. RJ, I want to wrap things up with you because one of those huge shifts that Barbara just mentioned, you know, could potentially be inclusion of a lot more climate language in this farm bill than we've seen in a lot of previous pieces of legislation, be it by as a standalone climate title, perhaps enhanced climate language throughout the titles of the farm bill. Your thoughts on the committee's, you know, the work ahead of the committee to address the amount of climate smart practices that folks are going to be looking for in the upcoming farm bill while still respecting some of those budgetary constraints that that the committees will be facing?
This is going to be, I think, one of the dominant discussions throughout the entire process. And we're very pleased with the effort that we already saw in the Senate with the overwhelming support for the Growing Climate Solutions Act. We know we're still waiting and there's still ongoing discussions in the House Ag Committee on that specific piece of legislation. We're optimistic that the committees will be able to, the members will be able to work through those issues and ultimately find a solution that's gonna be a voluntary in nature, profitable for farmers and ranchers, and most importantly, beneficial to society at large. So there is gonna be a heavy lift. The dollar amount, as we discussed throughout this entire conversation, is gonna be limited. And there's a lot of discussions that ultimately will be decided. NASDA will be continuing to push for climate initiatives. And this is one that is paramount for this discussion moving forward. And I think will be one of the largest discussions through the 2023 Farm Bill next year.
Mm-hmm. Well, folks, we've talked climate, we've talked research, we've talked a permanent disaster, we've talked a little nutrition, covered almost all of the bases of the Farm Bill. It's almost like writing this bill would be a lot easier if they just had the four of us do it. But I don't think that's happening, and I think we'll have to call it a day on this conversation. Appreciate you all joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, Hannah Pagel takes a look at food spending in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
During the COVID-19 pandemic, consumers bucked their normal trends and spent more money on groceries than on food away from the home. But new figures from the Department of Agriculture say that's no longer the case. Figures from 2021 show consumers spent more on prepared foods than on groceries. According to USDA's Economic Research Service, total food spending increased just over 12% from 2020, bumping it back up to just above pre-pandemic levels. Many consumers had more money to work with following the economic recovery and also experienced relaxed safety measures around indoor dining and social distancing. On top of that, the COVID-19 vaccine was just beginning to roll out. This led to a 21% increase in food away from home spending from the previous year and was the primary driver of the overall food spending increase. Food at home spending also increased by 4%, which was the same increase it saw in 2020 when the pandemic began. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the week to come. Congress will be back in town before heading back to their districts for a little time around the Independence Day holiday. There's a House Ag Committee hearing on Wednesday to discuss the nation's dairy policy. Over in the Senate, we'll be monitoring a Wednesday hearing where the Ag Committee is set to consider two bills, one to create a special investigator to enforce the Packers and Stockyards Act, and another brought by Senators Deb Fischer and Chuck Grassley to mandate certain amounts of cash trade in the beef cattle industry. As always, AgriPulse.com is your best bet to keep an eye on the latest happenings in farm policy in Washington and around the country. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.